Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. My name is Emmett Mann. Rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast platforms on YouTube. Like, subscribe there as well. Joining me today, Javon Shepherd. Sir, what's up?
Sir, playoff basketball, baby. So, Thinking back, Raptor season is obviously unwinded. Probably not the ending that anybody wanted or, you know, any of the fans or enthusiasts, but like you mentioned, we're talking before, just we got a lot of really good games going on right now. So still good times.
Man, the Suns-Clippers series. Like, I am so excited for game three tonight.
Yeah.
Boy, and oh boy.
Funny because that actually, you know, in my opinion, that might be the finals.
Right?
That might very well be the finals. And especially if the Clips can get out first round, and then now you get, you know, the idea of potential of getting PG back. Kawhi's looking good.
Kawhi's damn really good, looking bro. Good. So you damn add good.
You back into the mix, and
yep.
You know, it's funny because Westbrook, he's playing some good basketball as well, and I feel like there's this added chip on his shoulder for all of the scrutiny and all the criticism he's taken over the last, you know, couple of years. But I actually think this is the landing spot for him.
He's over the years, he's found a way to harness his energy, and his energy is his gift,
yeah.
You know, but it's also been a bit of a curse at points because he's just so energetic, so fast, and he can't slow things down. But it's like he's channeling all that energy into just being a jerk on defense.
Yeah.
Like, he's unreal, man. Unreal.
He's really set the tone. I feel like, you know, the Kawhi and Wes complement each other in a sense, because like you said, Wes's energy can sometimes be his biggest gift, but it can also be his biggest curse. And you need that person alongside of you that's either going to be the alpha in the room to say, Wes, tone it down. Or, you know, in this case, Kawhi has a stoic look about him that when he stares at you and those eyes pierce you, you kind of know I got to get myself in check.
Yeah.
And he's producing, right? And he's producing at a level. So if you have any basketball acumen or IQ, you know, okay, you know what? I got to scale back a bit, get this man the ball, let him do what he does. I think, to your point, Westbrook is just, he's really picked it up on the defensive end. He's locked and honed in there. And even, you know, a big play, game one, you know, him saving the basketball and keeping it in play off of, I can't remember who the...
Devin Booker, right? That play?
Yeah. Devin Booker was, and able to come up with a stop there, key stop.
Yeah. And we're seeing Kawhi Leonard, the shot maker, man.
Yeah,
the 2019 version of him, like, that is certainly still there. Anytime they give him the ball, he's getting to his spot. Ty Lue is so good at organizing plays to get his guys at the spots that they want the ball.
Yeah, Ty Lue is a player coach, and you can just see it includes in his teammates or permeates throughout his team. And the thing I like that you mentioned there, just it's interesting watching KD and Kawhi battle it out, and I'm actually impressed that there's been a good portions in those games where they've actually matched up, you know, one-on-one. Like KD, him. We know Kawhi's going to pick him up, right? Yeah. But KD's been accepting that challenge as well. But just to watch those guys really, like, navigate the court and just get to their spots, right? KD's a bit more creative. It's a bit more poetic. He's got the long range. He's got, you know, basically a seven-footer with guard skills. So he's put a bit more, you know, off the dribble, but gets to his spots and just elevates. Whereas Kawhi just missed the fundamental. One or two dribbles, maybe three, you know, elevating, slight fade, but he just gets it, right? And just to see both of those guys completely go against analytics and say, we are going to feast on a mid-range game. But that's what you get when you get two feature, you know, primary prolific scores in this game.
100%. We're going to get back to some of this stuff in a second. With Javon, we're going to do some off-season questions for the Toronto Raptors. And we're just starting this process. And, you know, sometimes you do player recaps and things of that nature. I'm not even sure if I'm going to do a lot of that stuff. Last season, it made more sense because of how the season went this year. I'm like, why are we going to do it? You know, but there are a lot of questions. And one of the biggest ones right off the bat is, why hasn't Masai Ujiri done an end-of-season presser yet, Javon?
Well, there seems to be a lot, you know, swirling around and circulating. I think, you know, to that question right there, there's a lot of unanswered questions. There's a lot of uncertainty, which with us on the outside are asking ourselves, so are they from the inside, right? Mm. And I think you and Coach Nurse alluded to it in that pregame press conference a couple weeks ago where, you know, you got to take the offseason to evaluate. He's got to take the offseason to evaluate some things. And
very poorly timed comment, but yes, moving on.
You know, I'm not mad at it. The timing may have been poor, but I'm not mad at the actual content in the comment, right? And I think that's what you're seeing with, you know, the front office and right now that delayed presser. There's just, and I feel the end of the last game, that last game against Chicago, there was an eerie feeling in the arena. I called that game with TSN there. And it was just this eerie feeling in the arena once the game was over. Yes, everybody may have been, you know, shocked by the results or pretty much maybe not shocked because pretty much a microcosm of this whole season. But there was this uncertain feeling. And I think a lot of that had to be with you look at the composition of the roster right now, and there's so much question marks in terms of free agency. You know, there's question marks in terms of who's the head coach going to be going into next season. In years past, you had more of an idea of what you were coming back to. It was just, you know, plug and play in a sense. Whereas this is probably the first off season where everybody's left in the dark and everybody's waiting and kind of sitting on edge to see what happens next or where, what direction is this team going. So, you know, I think a lot of that is, you know, this delayed presser, you want to have some of those answers when they are asked, right?
And sure,
that would probably answer, you know, my best assumption there.
Yeah, I think you're onto something with that. And I respect Masai because I think he wants to avoid getting on the stage and saying, I don't know, we're going to evaluate. We're thinking about it. We're figuring it out. I think he wants to, because he knows too, like the off season has just begun and there's a lot of work to be done. And the first part is deciding where you're going. And I think the fan base, the players, coaches, everyone needs to know that now. And in order for that to happen, Masai, Bobby and company, they got to figure out what route they're going to go with this. And so Josh Lewenberg, he'd reported that it could be late this week. That would be, I guess, tomorrow or early next week. But again, who knows? Like it could be even after that. Like, this is a very complicated process for the Raptors because of how unexpected this season was. Yeah. And there's many avenues they could go at this point.
So I think also, you know, and I like to look at it from a broader lens. We've also, I think this season was disappointing to many, yes. But we've also got to look back at last season, right? You had a team that overachieved last season, exceeded expectations, and was a 48-win season. And it was also that bar that was set could also be misleading, right? You look at last year and you played half the season without fans in the arena. And you also, you know, a number of teams didn't have their full roster coming to Toronto because of the COVID restrictions and so forth, right? So that is that record a true indicator of that team? We don't know. Now, could it have set the bar too high for this team? And a lot of the fans, a lot of the, you know, everybody that is following the Raptors organization, are they a bit harsh on this year's team without looking at, you know, this two-year lens, this two-year, because both seasons kind of rolled into one another, right?
Yeah.
So I like to look at things holistically. Now, you know, the other side to that is this team won a championship in 2019. So there's a new bar set. There's more expectation. There's a different expectation. Mm. And to have a lackluster season, yeah, some things have to be resolved. Now, do I think this is a situation where you completely, you know, rid your coach and, you know, completely wash this team in a clean slate? I do think it's premature for that, for the simple reason I do feel like the 2022 season could have potentially been misleading given the circumstances.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, there are a lot of things to answer. And, you know, for this team to be better, in my opinion, you need a couple guys that are just skilled guys, a couple guys that are just, you know what, flat out hoopers. You know, I'm going all over with that. We can go on and on about, you know,
we're going to get to this stuff for sure. We're going to get to some of this stuff.
And we'll get into it. I'll let you run the show, man.
Okay. All right. Well, start, because Nick Nurse, right? That's the thing that's kind of the hot topic right now is, will Nick Nurse be back? So if I believe, I mean, reportedly, is he has 1 year remaining on his contract. It's $9 million. If the Raptors were to let him go, they got to eat that $9 million. Not fun. $9 million bucks is a lot of money. I would love $9 million. But then the comment you mentioned that he made in Philly, some of the rumors that have been circulating around the team, just like the season as a whole, and the common theme during that end of season media availabilities with all the players, like they kept on saying noise. There was noise. There was noise. And I took it as trade rumor noise because there were a lot. I mean, like we thought the Raptors are going to be at this point now at the trade deadline when they were going to start making moves and just start rebuilding essentially, but they didn't. They kicked the can down the court and they signed Jakob Poeltl and so forth. But now they have to make some decisions. And with Nick Nurse, they have to make a decision as well, I guess, to some degree, because I don't think you can go into next season with him in a contract year. It's not really how it goes with coaches necessarily. And so you're deciding, do you want to bring him back? Is he your coach for the future? Is he the person that your current players want to guide them into this next phase of the team? These are things that they have to answer. And I go back and forth with this, but I want to hear what you think. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, you got to identify two things, right? Does Nick himself want to be here? And that's one. And, you know, what direction does front office want to go in? So there's two things that you really have to evaluate there. If you're looking at this thing based on production and performance, I look at Coach Nurse's, his resume as a head coach for this team. And I think you have a championship, you know, following year, you have a coach of the year, you know, you've coached the rookie of the year. So you have a year, the following year, you've overachieved. Four of those 5 years, you've had a pretty prominent and successful resume. Mm-hmm. Right? Now we're talking about that 1 year that is that variable there. I don't think it's time to move off of Coach Nurse. And I think, you know, you also have to listen to the players in the room. Right. And I've heard a couple of them, their sentiments that they've shared is that, you know, he's a big part of the player that they are today.
Sure.
Right. So that being said, it would allude to, you know, there is some players that are connected, some players that do have an appreciation for him. And we never know. You know, I think a lot of this is, you know, these are all valuable players. These are all pieces that, you know, a lot of teams across the league, 29 other teams have vetted. And we've seen a trade deadline. There was a lot of noise, so to say, because these are valuable pieces. Now, maybe this team just didn't perform the way they should have because they just didn't fit the right way. The pieces didn't fit.
Yeah.
So I do think you give that one more shot. You give that a goal. And if the voice, if the feature players and your core group of guys in that room are endorsing your head coach and supporting your head coach, I think you still move forward, right? Sure. Everybody has to be on the same page there.
Yeah.
And then it has to be aligned. That's got to be the key piece. Now, if you have one of the three parts that are thinking outside or it doesn't align, then maybe it's something that you explore outside.
Yeah. With Nick, like, and especially this team, because of how uniquely they're building their roster. And, you know, if we want to say that last season had a bit of a fluke side to it, and even like Fred VanVleet at the end of this season, during his end of season, he was saying that, you know, I don't think we snuck up on anyone this season. Last season, yes. This season, I think people were ready for us. And in some ways, that game 6 against Philly was a microcosm of what we saw this entire season. The overloading of the court, the lack of space for Pascal Siakam, teams forcing the Raptors to hit threes and they didn't. They had a lot of issues scoring the ball. a lot. And I think that was the root of a lot of their problems. Like, yes, the defense was up and down, but, you know, human nature suggests that if you're playing defense as hard as they do within a Nick Nurse system and you're not getting the payoff on offense, it's going to hurt your defense too. And I think we saw that time and time again. And obviously, you know, with some of the holes on the roster, it was the lack of rim protection, the lack of shooting. Look, you get Jakob Poeltl, and guess what? Post All-Star, you're fifth in defensive rating, right? So you addressed something.
You did. You definitely addressed something. And to your point, I'm always from the belief of at the end of the game, when that last buzzer goes, the team with the most points wins, right? So
facts.
Defense is great. Defense is great, but you've got to have an offense to support that defense and not put too much pressure on it. And I think, you know, the common theme was, again, the Raptors won the possession battles, you know, majority of the season, right? Mm-hmm. So they had opportunities to score the basketball. Now, if you want to take it to a numbers standpoint, you won the field goal percentages, but you're, you know, at the bottom of the league in three-point percentage and field goal percentage, right? Yeah. So you've got to find ways to put the ball in the hole, especially if you're getting the opportunities to point blank. There's no offense for that. There's no, you know, tactics. It's not about basketball IQ or acumen. It's you have more possessions, put the ball in the hole, you win the game because you're doing it on one end. But I think a lot, to your point, a lot of times, you know, things became stagnant. There's a lot of pressure on, you know, the inability to shoot the basketball at a consistent rate and stretch the floor, open up the floor. And again, that is, to me, you know, composition, but at the same time, guys have to develop as well. You know, even Pascal shooting the bat, he's the feature guy. You know, he's got to be able to shoot the ball at a high clip as well to force defenses to play a bit more honest, collapse more when he's penetrating and contest when he's on the perimeter, run him off the three-point line. That opens up for everybody else. Now, as a feature player, much is expected, right? So there's going to be a lot on your shoulders if you're in that role. And, you know, I think that's where the offense kind of fluctuated up and down sometimes because he wanted it. And, you know, sometimes the ball was in his hands a little too stagnant at times. But at the same time, you know, everybody on the perimeter didn't necessarily knock down shots to make it any easier on him.
And that's true. So that's like the one side with Nick is that he didn't have necessarily the tools. Raptors were figured out, that kind of stuff. But I think there are some things you could critique with him. And I wonder if these could be things that end up, you know, biting him in the rear end when we get to that point, like the lack of bench production, right? And I'm curious how you feel about this. So the lack of bench production, the perceived lack of talent off the bench, not being able to, you know, get their starters to 35 minutes per game. Do you think, is that the players or, because we know Nick Nurse, right? Like I remember Aaron Rose asked him a question before the play-in game and it was something around like the uniqueness of that game. And Nick's like, every game is a must win to me, right? And that's the Raptors motto, right? We want to win every single game, but at the same time, you are trying, I think, to develop players. Players need playing time to develop. And not everyone is built like Fred VanVleet, where you can give them, you know, 10 minutes in their rookie season and all of a sudden they impress you. Some guys need time, reps, they need to fail, they need to get themselves up, and then they become something. It's been done time and time again. Look at the Memphis Grizzlies, right? This is what they did. And I wonder if this is something that, you know, I wonder if this was an error. In judgment, it may not even be Nick, actually. It could be like the whole front office is talking about this kind of stuff. But ultimately, this is Nick deciding who plays and who doesn't.
Well, the thing about sports, it's always team, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to have 2, 3, 4 right answers and 2, 4, 3 things that could be right at the same time, right? Now a part of that, there's times where could Nick as a coach be more creative? Yes, but so can every coach, right? When you look back and evaluate, right? You're always going to say, how can I get better? That is why these coaches are in the position that they are coaching at the NBA level, because they have an ability to adapt, adjust, get better, right? And look in the mirror and acknowledge, like self-acknowledgement, assessment. Now, from the player standpoint as well, it's interesting because, you know, for the season, we've said we need a bench, we need more. We need bench contribution. Well, we've also had 2 starters go to the bench. So in theory, you have 2 guys that are capable of playing starter minutes and we're logging heavy minutes. producing, now a part of your bench, right? So it's not about talent. It's not about ability. I think, again, it boils down to composition, right? And the meshing of the guys. And, you know, yeah, your coach could have been more creative, but these are the same players that were logging 30 minutes. When you're talking about Gary Trent Jr., we're talking about Precious Achiuwa. They were logging every minute to start, is now gone to your bench. You should be able to get that same production from those guys. On top of that, I think, you know, from the player standpoint, where they have to be better as well. I think sometimes they had their own personal agendas that got in the way of team. Hmm. And when you look at the next 2 years, right, five or six of your top seven guys, top eight in rotation, are in contract years. Now, we can't dismiss or negate the fact that this is their livelihoods. There's a selfish part, rightfully so, and that is absolutely fine. You put anybody in that situation, you're going to think about what my contract may be, what my contract may not be if I don't get the numbers that I need.
Yeah,
right. You can't dismiss that. It would be unfair to place this responsibility to them. Oh, hey, be selfish, just be a team guy, and don't think about, you know, feeding your family. Right, we're unfair to them. So I think sometimes that may have gotten in the way as well. So it's just a wild mix of everything that may have contributed to, you know, the underperforming or underwhelming performances of whether it be bench or starters at times. It's just so many variables.
It's true. It's true. I wonder if, is he enough of a player coach in today's NBA? And I bring this up because I think of this. These examples are about Gary Trent Jr. Funny that you just mentioned him too. Earlier in the season, when he was first moved to the bench, I noticed that he found out in a morning shoot around, and it was just written on the board, you know, who the starters were, right? And then, you know, there were a couple of rumblings here and there. Nick calls him out for his defense. He's called out players in the past through the media, not necessarily going to the player and talking to them. They find out that the coach is calling them out through the media. Things like that, I wonder if they don't jive the same way as they used to with previous generations of players.
Well,
What do you think?
Because you're going to have days when you love your coach. You're going to have days when you hate your coach. And it doesn't really, it doesn't matter who you play for, right? When the ball's rolling your way, I'm sure you're going to be fine with him. When it's not, you're going to have some quirks with him. I think personally, you know, whether he's a player coach or not, and it depends on how you define that, you look at the shot distribution amongst his team, and everybody puts up shots. Everybody has the green line. Everybody has freedom to shoot the basketball. If I'm a player, I want to be in that situation because I have the ultimate freedom. It doesn't matter whether the feature player gets 10, 15, 20 shots. I have the green light to shoot as well. Now, every player that plays this game is going to tell you, unless they're, you know, a strictly defensive-minded player, you want that freedom. You want that autonomy to step on the court and feel comfortable taking shots, right? So, you know, from that sense, I do think he's a player coach. Now, some of those other things that you mentioned there or other situations, I mean, could you handle them differently? Absolutely. Is there any perfect way to do it? No. You also, you know, there's also times where I thought too many guys had freedom, right? So there's so many ways to look at it. There's so many styles of coaching. There's also, you know, you have the Tom Thibodeaux, you have Greg Popovich that are just system guys, or more, it's more of a dictatorship. So there's no right or wrong answer. Again, it's how you guys respond to the coaching. How do they buy in? And like anything, you know, you can talk about the most players coach there is. You can talk about the most strict, rigid coach there are. Coaches win, everything's perfectly fine. When they're not winning or they're underperforming, you know, everything has an expiration date. Right. So
there's
going to come a time where people are going to criticize or have questions, no different than players. Right. They I think, you know, prime example to me is Kyle Lowry. Right. Amazing time here in Toronto. You know, there's points in his career where we start to point fingers and there, you know, people start to have questions about his game, you know, his conditioning, so forth. He goes over to Miami now and he's the guy coming off of the bench. Right. And he signed a big deal late in his career for him to be the guy or the guy alongside the guy coming off his bench. So whether you're a coach, whether you're a player, there becomes this time where it's just an expiration.
Yeah. Expiration. Coaches have that too. Yeah. Coaches have that sometimes too. It's true. But I mean, from a coaching standpoint, like, look at these playoffs right now. The other day I watched the Kings boxing one Steph Curry. Look at how the Nets are guarding Joel Embiid. Where do those start? I mentioned those two examples because those are things that, you know, Nick Nurse was the one who boxed and won Steph Curry. And the way the Nets are guarding Joel Embiid, you know, keeping him away from the basket, showing him lots of bodies, forcing him to move the ball, although he's doing a much better job of that than he used to a few years ago. It's probably because of what the Raptors have thrown at him and what Nick Nurse has thrown at him. So, and also, like, offensive rebounding actually is something that has been trending up throughout this entire season. And it seems like that's a focal point of a lot of NBA teams. And the Raptors were the team last season that made it a focal point for them. And it's like things like this, that you see that Nick Nurse, what his influence is happening on the league. Teams are paying attention. Coaches are paying attention to him. It's a copycat league, but that just shows that he is still, you know, fitting into the current NBA scope. It's just, I don't know, is he the coach for the Toronto Raptors right now?
It's fair to say that Nick Nurse has revolutionized the NBA game in a sense, right? And it's taken the rest of the league 2-3 years to catch up to it and adapt to it. And now you see a lot of the other teams, a lot of other schemes, you know, reapplying his schemes, his tactics, his style, his brand of play. Yeah. So he's had his imprint, his fingerprint on that. And you commend him for that. You tip your hat to him for that.
Sure.
Despite all the criticism he may have taken this year, look across the league and you see the impact that he's had. Now, with that, you know, you also have to continue to evolve, because once the rest of the league catches up, it's a copycat league. Yeah. Now somebody has to figure out what's next. So I think he's one of those mad scientists that you just never know what's going to be next. And you just continue to evolve, and you can continue to have that sort of impact across the league.
It's a nice little pivot, actually, from what you were saying, because I mentioned that we were going to get back to the Clippers and stuff like that. And Fred VanVleet made a nice comment during his end of season. He was talking about, you know, I think we got to find our identity. We got to find our path. We got to find our way. And it caught me off guard a little bit because, I mean, it's just not something you hear a player say all the time, but you look deeper into what he's talking about. And I hear what he's saying. Like, you mentioned the freedom within the Raptors offense, the fact that he started the season coming off an all-star year. He was an off-ball shooter. And then by season's end, he's running pick and roll with Yak, and it's one of the feature parts of the Raptors offense. Scotty Barnes, he's a next action big at one point. Then he's a floor spacer. Then he's going back to the role that he was last season, essentially towards the end of the season. It's like there was so much change throughout this year, and it was probably them trying to figure things out. It's them trying to accommodate all the moving parts. But I don't know if they really have an identity, especially offensively. Like, defensively, I see it. I mean, it's all about aggression, and we'll get to that in a second. But I wonder if, maybe the Vision 6-9, look at the NBA right now. There's a premium on skill versatility versus size versatility, right? Those are the teams that are excelling now. And the Raptors are really lacking that. Like the Clippers, it was crazy the other day. I was watching the game. I'm like, they got four guys on the court right now that could run pick and roll.
Yeah.
Four guys on the court.
Yep.
That was wild.
You watched that with Sacramento as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, to that point, I think identity, and this sometimes it gets misconstrued, is you gain your identity off the court, right? You gain that identity when, you know, your leader or, you know, somebody within that locker room says, guys, we're going out to eat on the road. It's six o'clock, everybody be downstairs. You know, you're getting in Ubers or whatever the case may be. And we're going to a restaurant together. We're doing some team stuff together. We're playing cards together. We're on the road. We're bonding together. That's where you gain your identity, right? Not, you know, the ball isn't tossed up. You play 48 minutes of basketball. Everybody's going to play hard. Everybody's going to dive on the floor, right? That's not your identity. Your identity is, you know, the fact that we broke bread together, I trust you trust me. And now when you dive on that loose ball and you're not able to get it, I'm diving right behind you and I'm tipping it into you, and I knew that you were going to have my back, right? That's where you build identity. That's identity. So and it's funny because at the beginning of a season, everybody, you know, you have 30 teams that talk about, you know, they have goals and aspirations of winning a championship, and, you know, we're all going to come play hard for one another. And that is, it's almost cliche, but to me, that identity is developed in that locker room, that identity is developed, you know, on when you take those long road trips. That identity is developed is when rookies are coming in and, you know, your veteran guys are the first ones at the arena to meet them and just shake a hand or go watch them at summer league and start to build that camaraderie with them. So, you know, what your identity is starts way before training camp in October. And I think that's where, you know, who knows? I don't know if this team was as close or maybe they're a little disjointed. I think they really like each other, but in terms of that chemistry and cohesiveness, you know, how many times do we break bread together?
So what do you think he meant by that comment? We need to find our identity. What was he talking about?
Well, I think like we've seen all season, there was points where we just needed to come together, right? And we also, when you needed a big play down the stretch, and I think even Chris Boucher alluded to, you know, these fake comebacks. There was a number of those, and, you know, that kind of went viral and people had fun with that. But you know, finding our identity is the ability to come together and make a big play, the ability to come together and, you know, trust that what was drawn up in the huddle, we have the ability to execute it and my teammate's going to have my back, you know, helping to help, trusting that, you know, I'm going to keep my man in front of me and get this stop right here. So it's, you know, it's not just going out and, hey, I'm going to get up in the defense and scream, defense, pull up my shorts and hike up my shorts and, you know, play the 6-9 basketball, slap the floors. What does that mean? It's empty calories, right? It's empty calories if everybody's not doing it together. And for everybody to do it together, we've got to have, you know, a hell of a relationship off the court as well.
I was doing some looking around of numbers post All-Star and the Raptors in clutch time. Post All-Star, they were 28th in true shooting percentage, 23rd in net rating, 28th in offensive rating, and 14th in defensive rating in clutch time. To what you were talking about, all the fake comebacks, all the times that they almost won, but then they didn't, similar to that Bulls game, which I'm sure all these stats would probably uphold for that game as well. It was a big problem. I don't think at any point really the Raptors, I mean, they knew what they wanted to run. Like they had their pet plays, you know, the Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet pick and roll, but there was just always something that just would go wrong. It's like it's a chemistry. It was turnovers. It was an array of things, but it was always something.
Yeah. To add to that, winning isn't easy, right? Winning is actually really, really hard. And sometimes you have to go through these times as well. I think Jack Armstrong said this, weeks ago on a broadcast, winning a championship sometimes sets organizations back.
Yeah.
Because you have a number of guys that have now increased their value in the marketplace. They move on, or you always have key pieces, veteran pieces that are on your team that are now like on their way out. And those veteran pieces, like we've seen in the Mark Gasol and the Ibaka, that were at the tail ends of their career in terms of performance and production, but at the peak in terms.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Of holding a locker room together.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I look at this group here and underwhelming season. Everybody's a bit disappointed, but you remember all these feelings, right? That you've gone through the mix of emotions, the highs, the lows, and you gained a tremendous amount of experience because you've been in a number of tight games. It wasn't like this team was getting blown out, you know, night in, night out.
Yeah.
You've been in a number of tight games, you know, tight game scenarios and situations where, you know, going forward, especially for a guy like Scotty, I've been here now, right? Now, I know how to value this possession. I know how to value, you know, shot, time and score on the clock. So there's more of importance, there's more value placed on that when there's 3 minutes to go in a game to come out with the victory and how much, you know, I've got to come up with this big play or that big play, or whether I'm not making the play, I've got to communicate to my teammates what's happening on the court. So there's still a tremendous amount of value in this season right here.
So the Raptors' vision, like the 6-9 thing that they've been pursuing, I remember Masai Ujiri, I believe it was at the beginning of last season or maybe the end, but he was saying something like, you got to have a vision and you kind of like in terms of trying to get a next title, right? And he was alluding to the Warriors, how they found theirs and the Raptors found theirs during their 2019 year. But you got to have a vision and you just have to pursue it and hope it works, right? Mm-hmm. And I wonder that I mentioned like the skill versatility versus defensive versatility, size versatility, that difference. And that showed itself, I think, with some of the problems they had this season. If you talk about shooting, if you're talking about finishing around the rim, finishing from actually anywhere on the court, some of these traits are things that are prominent in guards and smaller players, right? And with the NBA now, the teams that are most successful, obviously skill is at a premium. You need a few skilled guys, or at least you got to decide which way you want to go. Either you have like your Joel Embiid and you build around him, or maybe you have a few perimeter players and you just have a lot of players that have a lot of different facets to their game, right? Like you can't really pick them apart. You can't play them off the court. We talk about playing a person off the court defensively. Sometimes you can't play them off the court offensively either, you know? Yeah. And if you look at it from that scope, you know, the Raptors, they don't have a lot of that, right? And they're hoping those players get there, right? But this goes back to that question, developing while you're trying to win is hard. It's hard to do that, especially when players need those reps and you're trying to win games at the same time.
Having a vision is all trial and error as well in terms of, you know, is it working? How long, how much patience do we have? And also just evaluating the rest of the NBA, where is the rest of the NBA going? Right. And I think that 6'8", 6'9" across the board vision, I completely understand it. Remember, you know, we were in a league where LeBron James dominated, right? And Kevin Durant dominated. We had all these guys that were 6'8", 6'9", that were versatile. And you also start to see now that those guys are aging, right? You know, LeBron and KD, and they can't do the same things that they used to at this age. It just takes that much more energy out of them, right? So you're starting to see, okay, those guys are physically playing at, you know, great levels, extremely high level at the same time, but they're also fading out, right? Sure. We know the tail end of their careers. Yep. And when they were at the peak, they influenced what teams were looking for, what teams were drafting to compete and not only stop those guys, but you want to find the next one, right? So they're on their tail, you know, tail end of their careers, and you start to see the success of, you know, these a number of guards and skilled players again, you see the transition in the league, right? So now I feel like this is going to be an influx, and you're going to see those draft picks start to come in and a team start to identify highly skilled players that can play 1, 2, 3 positions, that can defend 3 positions, but at the same time, very skilled.
Yeah.
So I think there's a big part of that. And then does that adjust? Is that, do you pivot in your vision as the league adjusts, or do you stay pat, right? And that's, you know, these teams have a lot more resources than you and I have. We're sitting here talking about
sure. Yeah.
You know, so then you have all the analytics, all the, you know, the scouts, and people are paid really well to identify talents at, you know, young ages, and also research on the NBA and the way it's trending, right? So I think we are seeing a bit more of that skilled brand of play that you're mentioning, and you've got to, you know, it's a risk. There's risk and reward, and you decide, do you stay pat, or is that time again? And here's that word: has that expired?
My worry about trying to develop some of these, I mean, power forwards really to become shooters, is that there is a ceiling to it where they will only become league average. Tops, league average, right? While the NBA is showing us that, you know, some of the best teams in the league, right? You might need to have 2 guys, maybe even 3 above league average shooters within your starting lineup, or overall, actually, in your starting lineup, you got to have at least 4 shooters, really, right? And looking at post All-Star, the 10 worst 3-point shooting teams, the Nets and Nuggets were in there. Nuggets, oddly, but all the other teams were not playoff teams, right? And I guess now the Raptors are kind of banking on Pascal Siakam and Scottie Barnes. Like, they both dipped down 2% in their three-point shooting percentage this season compared to last year. If you're looking at how those two can coexist along with the Jakob Poeltl, you need somebody to level up quite a bit. And it's not going to be, obviously, it's not going to be Jakob Poeltl. I don't even think it should be Scottie Barnes because he's so early in his career. He's got so much to learn. So I'm kind of looking at Pascal Siakam to level up in this area, but, you know, composition, as you mentioned, right, with your starting lineup, I think this was probably one of the biggest issues with the team is that there wasn't enough guard play or players with the skill set of guards to help the other players get to their spots and get them open looks and things like that. And even the starting lineup that they ended with, I don't know, it's not really it, actually. Right, you're still missing shooting, and I'm not sure if that's the route to go. Like, I like all the players. I think they have a lot of talent. We know this. I just think that the composition, how you're building your roster now, especially with how the NBA is going and the need for scoring, like, you have to score the ball now, right? Even like during the championship year, you could get away with being, you know, a mediocre offense. That was 4 years ago, and now you can't.
Yeah, composition again. But I think, you know, sometimes I hear all these numbers, and numbers are great, whatever. But players got to play, right? At the end of the day, it's a game of read and react. It's not a game of algorithms. It's not math, right? So these guys got to go out there. You got to be reactive. You got to have counters to your game. You know, coaches got to put you in a position. They've got to identify the strengths and the weaknesses of their team and put you in a position to score as well. But the team definitely needed some shooting, but could, you know, maybe if you have one or two more creative or skilled guys, that opens up, you know, shots for a lot of these other guys, right? And you see a completely different team in terms of percentages. So, again, there's a lot of variables there. And I know a lot of people are high on the numbers and the percents here, the percents there. But again, you can have a completely different team with one or two changes. I think that's, you know, I can't harp on these guys being poor players because there's a reason why, there's a big reason why every team across the league, 29 other teams, you know, were looking at Toronto on trade deadline to get one or two pieces from this team, be it that they can change the complexion of a organization, right? So, yeah, they've got it. Guys got to go out there. They just got to hoop. They got to, sometimes you get into your own head and we negate to think about that side as well. They're also humans, right? You miss a couple shots, you get in your own head and, you know, that leash gets shorter, the rotation gets shorter. You know, guys are coming in, you lose some rhythm. Guys are going out, you lose rhythm. Got to have tough skin. Got to just hoop. You got to be a player.
Let's get to some of these UFAs, RFAs, players with player options, put it that way. It's kind of everything, actually. Let's start with Fred. So Fred's season was fairly up and down, at least with the shooting. From a shooting perspective, we know the Raptors were very, very reliant on him to be a high volume and high maker of three-point shots, and didn't really go that way. I think he had about 2 months where he shot over 36%, 3 months rather. The rest didn't quite go that way. You think they bring him back?
I think you definitely think about it. You definitely consider it. And you look at how does it impact you long-term, right? He's smaller guard. He's getting up in age as well. Like, what are your goals? You got to identify your goals for the next 3-4 years.
Yeah.
And have a vision there for the team, right? Because one, you don't want to waste his career, his peak years, and you also don't want to impact your organization, right? So, you know, I look at his shooting numbers like you mentioned, and you know, I've heard that all season, and you know, a number of people have criticized him, but I also know Fred was one of the skilled guys that you mentioned on this team that was able to keep a dribble alive off of a ball screen and allow, you know, give Poeltl time, have the pace with the ball, keep the ball alive, give Poeltl time to roll to the basket, dump it down to him, or, you know, keep the ball alive and kick it to the weak side there. He was one of the guys that could get to the rim off of, create for himself and get to the rim. Like you mentioned, you know, the team didn't have many of those, right? So I don't look at it's where, and it's a, I think it's a situation where, nah, Fred didn't shoot the ball well, but he's got to go. He's got to hit the road. No, like, this is where the NBA is right now. Skilled players are a big difference maker in the league. You have one or two more of those around him. You know, what are you talking about? And we also have to remember and keep in mind, when you give up a player, right, you know the holes of their game. You know the pros, the cons, you know the upside, you know the downside.
Hmm.
You get a player, you're not getting a perfect player, right? All those players, you know, free agents that you're looking to sign or think you can upgrade to, they come with holes in their games as well, right? And because we're in market, we're able to identify our players. Out of market, you don't see those players enough. They're not in practice day in, day out. You don't see them 82 games of the season. You see the highlights, right? You see the games that you do watch. And, you know, you go on NBA.com and, you know, so-and-so had a 30-point game. You watch that game. You watch those highlights. You think, wow, they play well. You know, that's a good player. Well, you don't have enough body of work or research enough or have that investment there to see, okay, where can this team not help us or this player not help us?
Sure. I wonder what Fred would look like with a reliable backup point guard. You know, I wonder what his minutes, what his production, what his shooting would look like. And that has been there for a couple seasons, right? You look at any traditional team, obviously they have a backup point guard, and the Raptors have a few in the system, which I'm going to ask you about in a second. But, you know, I wonder how that would have impacted his season. And when we talk about, you know, future contracts and things like that, the Jalen Brunson contract is the one that comes up, right? It was 4 years, $104 million. And, you know, Fred has reportedly said that he wants around $30 million, whatever that happens, like, we'll see what happens. You got to get that money first from someone before you can get it. Someone's got to offer it to you. At the same time, though, I do wonder about, you know, how his body is going to hold up. When we did the pod with Fred and CJ on Strictly Hoops, one thing he said he loved about Jeff Devin Jr., he's like, no NBA miles on his body,
mm-hmm.
right? And Fred has a lot of NBA miles on his body, bro. A lot of minutes. He's been one of the consistent leaders among minutes. Miles ran on offense and defense. The dude hustles. He works very hard. And that stuff reflects in your body. I don't doubt that he's going to take care of his body. He's talked about, you know, putting more resources into that to ensure he can last the season. And, you know, to his credit, that Bulls game, he was probably one of their most impactful players, right? When it was all said and done. But yeah, I do wonder about that, is how his body's going to hold up, and also how it could, how playing alongside Scottie Barnes, how is that going to impact his trajectory? Because we got to talk about that too.
Yeah, I think, you know, as you get older and you mature, you also start to understand your body a bit more, right? And Fred's alluded to it as well, you know, just investing in more resources into his body so that he can, you know, make it through a season. And I think he's done a good job of that. I think I think you've seen that this year. Probably, you know, he looked healthier. At those points in the season where, you know, midway, you could tell he was a little slower, but then once you got past that point, there was games where he just had a pop in the step. He looked athletic. He was moving and flying around the court.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Crossovers and exploding to the rim. Whereas probably, you know, years past or even last year, you could see the fatigue later in the season. You could see him exhausted a bit. So I think that's already in place. And again, that comes with age and maturity. When you first get into the league, you know, and you feel like you're invincible, you're young, right? Your body's different. You could eat anything you want. You could do what you want and you can perform the same.
Yeah.
But you start to look around, you're seeing guys that are, you know, playing 10, 12 years, and you start to take note of, okay, what are they doing, right? My body composition is different from theirs. So you start to invest more in, you know, the health sciences, the diet and so forth. And, you know, I think if you're willing to put that in, then there's a return on that investment. So, you know, I don't question that about Fred at all, because he's also been a guy from his time at, you know, even from college at Wichita State, where he's found ways to overachieve and he's found ways to, you know, continue to progress. And I don't think it stops now when you get more mature and there's more in the line. Heck, he had a newborn this season, right? So you have a family, you have more motivation. a lot that goes into it.
Skill versatility, as you outlined, right? I was talking about that, and the Raptors need more of it. He's one of the players that actually does have it. And it may not be something that people really think about with Fred, but he acknowledges, too, that you know he is pretty versatile in his ability to work from different spots on the court. He can be off ball. He can be on ball. He can run pick and roll. He can hit the mid-range. He can be an off-ball cutter. He can just help run your offense. This is the versatility that a championship team needs, right? And so he has shown that he can be the sixth man on a championship team, obviously. And now the next level would be being able to do it as a point guard, as a number two or something like that, similar to Pascal Siakam, right? He wants to show he can be a number one on a championship team, but you know that those skills are there. And if the Raptors indeed do want to win, and that's something we're going to get to in a second here as well, you probably need Fred VanVleet. You probably need Fred.
I agree. I'm a big Fred, you know, advocate. I endorse.
Yeah.
Him because I just think he's one of those. He's just solid. Yeah. He's a solid, skilled guy. And you're right. Like, depends on what you have around him. You can alleviate some of the pressures or some of the responsibility. He is still a smaller guard. So, you know, just getting into the paint and finishing at the paint becomes a bit tougher just based on makeup, right? Physical makeup. Sure. And then that also impacts your ability to shoot the basketball because teams are going to run you off the line. Teams are going to be a bit more aggressive and be more conscious of you at the three-point line, knowing that you can shoot it. And funneling you in turn, you know, positioning you into tougher shots, knowing that you're undersized. So at the same token, I just think he's one of the guys that's dynamic. And depending on the pieces that are around him, you get more out of him.
Definitely. You know, watching Davion Mitchell guard Steph Curry, I'm like, man, that was Fred in 2019 doing that, moving that way. He can't move the same way anymore. That's where the miles kind of come into play a little bit, but and there's been a lot of talk about point of attack defense of his specifically within the Raptor system. It's very important, point of attack defense, not just like in general, obviously, but with the Raptor system, it is a bit more heightened because of how aggressive they are. And whether you agree with it, I personally am not a huge fan of that part of their defensive system, but anyways, it's very hard to play point of attack defense in today's NBA. Very, very hard. Everybody gets blown by. Everybody.
And it's funny because Eric Spoelstra earlier in the year, he had a comment and said that everybody in the NBA is trying to figure out how to play defense right now. Every coach is trying to figure out how to play defense. And you're right, right? There's a lot of rules that have changed and, you know, you can't have as much contact on ball and really dictate where the offense goes or be as aggressive on the perimeter there. And then you get these, you know, these big time dynamic, physical, athletic guards that are just, point of attack blowing by that first line of defense. Yeah. If you don't have a shot blocking presence on that back end, or you don't have a big time rotation, everybody on a string, it's curtains, you're dead, right? And that's also why you see these scores just inflated, right? You're seeing these 120s consistently, you're seeing some 130s and so forth. But it's a lot of that point of attack. How can you stay in front of somebody?
Probably keep it pretty short on Jakob Poeltl. Just you have to bring him back, essentially. You got to resign him.
Yeah. Because he's gone. So this is the big part of it is this. You've gone without a center for so long, and he's come in, he's shown, and he's proved he's a serviceable, more than serviceable big, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what he does well is just really facilitates, right? He's almost another guard that's on the floor. You know,
They didn't even tap into that completely.
Yeah, well, they did.
Yeah.
But it's tough to tap into that when you have a guy coming midseason.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Oh, it's a bit of, you know, timing. Now he has the ability. I think it's not even a question of if you bring him back. You kind of have to. There's no choice.
Yeah. It's like the money thing. I mean, I would imagine somewhere in this 15 to 20 million range kind of thing, but, and some may think that's a bit of a steep price. That's kind of the price for a starting caliber center, and everyone wants one. Everyone needs one. If you want to make any kind of noise in the NBA, you got to have him. You mentioned like the passing with his, like, I would like to see how a training camp, a full training camp, preseason, all that stuff. And then you go into that with something that you can work with Jakob Poeltl. And maybe it's some roster changes. Maybe you have some more movement shooters. Maybe you have some guys who can curl and get to the rim. Like, there's something there that with some tweaks to the roster, you could probably use Yak a lot more.
Yeah, I think he's, again, one of those guys that just a high IQ guy. And forget on court for a second, how everybody spoke about him in the locker room, right? He was a fun, yeah. And he was funny. We didn't see that on the court. He was always business. He was, you know, a locker room guy, funny, you know, changed the mood of the locker room when he got here, when he came back here. And I think that speaks volumes as well, because you need those pieces as well. So I think his value is far more important in the locker room than it is even on the court.
Now, what about Gary? What do you think?
You know, Gary was had an interesting year, right? He's definitely exceeded his current contract. That's without a doubt. There was a lot of expectations for him last year. There's a lot of expectations for him this year. He was thrown into the fire. He was taken out of the fire, injuries. And fortunately not anything major, but just the nagging stuff that kept him out of the lineup. So there was a lot of inconsistencies with him this year, but he's still a guy that can shoot the basketball, right? I do think there's a lot of development for him in the offseason to become one of those more dynamic guards in this league, so he can have more of an impact and not just be known as a shooter or a spot up guy or get into his jump shots. Because I do think in today's game, right, he's already giving you 15, 16 points. You add a bit more wiggle in your game, put a bit more handle. You can get to the rack and finish a bit better. You're talking about a guy that could potentially give you 20 consistently, right?
Sure.
So, you know, some development for him. Again, you know, I don't think you turn an eye on him. I think it all depends on numbers.
What the hell you're trying to do? Well, yeah, and numbers too. Yeah.
Numbers one, and what you're trying to do for all these guys. So I personally am not saying no to any of them. Mm. I just think you have to first identify the direction that you're going and put the pieces to the puzzle that way. And I think, you know, sometimes we harp on the money, but I think there's creative ways, and Bobby and Masai have done it before, to structure contracts that you can have all the guys that you want, right?
Yeah.
Hey, first, and you and I wouldn't be able to answer that. That's why we're sitting here waiting for a Masai presser. You know, what direction is the team going? Just knowing office coaches on the same page, and then you can start to plug and play with pieces.
Yeah. And that's the tricky part. Like, you look at, you know, the salaries that are coming up this season, then next season with OG is extension eligible this offseason. So is Pascal, actually. And then you got Scotty Barnes, who's going to be eligible next offseason. So is this a lot of money if we're talking about the top six players? Like, you drafted well, you brought in some nice pieces, and now they're getting really expensive, and they just got to manage that money. And you're right, I'm not smart enough to know how they do that, so I'm just going to leave it there. But I could see why you would bring all those players back. I think Jakob Poeltl is the one that you definitely need to bring back, depending on what you want to do for the next 2-3 years. Fred VanVleet is a question mark to some degree. And that's where we pivot to Scotty Barnes, maximizing Scotty Barnes. His numbers were very similar to what he produced last season. And there were portions of the year where he was asked to play more point guard. Some of it went well, other parts didn't. He did eventually rain down on those turnovers. He was a bit more composed with the ball. You love the flashes that you see. You see the creativity in his passing. But within the Raptors, especially with what their vision is, the possession battle is very important. So, you know, containing the ball and holding on to it is something they put an emphasis on. They were one of the lower turnover teams in the NBA. But at the same time, do you think they're contemplating the idea of, like, all right, let's just take our pieces 24 and under ish, just as a number, and let's build from there? So that would mean a Pascal Siakam, a Fred VanVleet. You kind of say, thank you for your service. You've been terrific Raptors. Maybe your numbers are going to be hanging in the rafters one day. It's like, but we got to make this pivot because we're not sold on what we have is good for our long-term success.
Yeah. I'm not from the belief of, you blow up anything and start from scratch. I don't think people realize how long it takes to start from scratch. and there's still no certainty there, right? You have really good pieces. You have some valuable pieces to a team, some pieces that you could build with, right? So I'm not from that belief at all. I think, again, there's too much uncertainty there that can set your organization back 10 years, 20 years. Yeah. You just don't know what you're going to get. The draft is a lottery for that reason. It's called a lottery for that reason. Like, you don't know what you're going to get, right? It's a game. It's a gamble. And like we're seeing today, you're getting guys that are, at the back end of a second round that are becoming superstars in the NBA. You're having guys that are undrafted becoming superstars in the NBA. So there's no sure shot or clear cut that, hey, if I get a top five pick, this is going to be a cornerstone or franchise guy that can change an organization. Right. So if you have the ability to build from what you have inside out, I'm sticking with that. I'm also leaning in on developing players. Right. And that's what Toronto has to do. It hasn't necessarily been a free agent landing spot historically. Right. So you still have to develop. You still have to draft well. And a lot of that stuff has to be done internally. All right. So when you blow up a team, you're banking on two things: drafting, and you have to understand the draft pool for the next 4 or 5 years to come. And then you also have to be able to land big time free agents. Right. Again, there's no certainty in either. And historically, Toronto just hasn't been a landing spot for free agents. This is a completely different country, right? We have to remember that a lot of these guys, and drafting them as young as they are, they don't know much about Canada.
It's funny we talk about all this stuff, but had the Raptors had Jakob Poeltl the entire season, they're probably a top six team. And they'd be in a playoff series right now. That's the funny part.
Yeah, you're talking about there was so much parity in the league, 4 or 5 games or, 7 games. It actually changes how people perceive you, how other teams perceive you, how your locker room meshes. Because, again, winning solves a lot, and it breeds confidence.
It does. Fred said it during his end of season. He's like, we finished 41-41. It's like, you guys can probably count 10 games that we probably should have won. I'm like, we probably could, actually, off the top of our heads. 10 games that you probably should have won, and that's a huge difference. Your record is quite different. All right, so as we talk about the Raptors, where they are, say, like, they bring a lot of these pieces back, and we know the flaws. It's bench production, it's shooting. That's kind of the bigger things right there. And I mentioned the backup point guard position. You have Jeff Dowden Jr. still around. They did not bring him onto their roster for the playoffs, but he's still there. Malachi Flynn's under contract. Delano Banton is a UFA now. What are we doing here? You got a lot of players. What do you think?
Direct boils down to direction again, and what you get in this offseason. At the same time, you have, 3 backup guards that are all, vastly different. Malachi Flynn, he's more of that a combo type guard, with smaller frame. I don't think we know his true potential yet, because he really hasn't garnered those minutes and consistently gotten those. What I will say, he's tough as nails, because every time he has got those minutes, he's jumped up and he's performed. And he's come off the bench, sitting 40 minutes and not down 2, big time threes, or just, and people don't understand how tough that is. Banton, he's obviously still young. I think he has a lot to learn, at 6'8", and he just plays up and down, right? And he's, as long as he learns to really gain, that experience and that knowledge of how to use his speed, how to use pace, right? I still think, he has the sky's the limit for him. There's a lot of potential there. And then Jeff Dowden Jr., I think he's the interesting one, because, like Fred mentioned, there's not a lot of miles there. And he's really done well in his minutes.
He's a backup point guard. He could be a backup point guard. He could be their backup point guard. Yeah.
He could. There's points where, he has to expand his game and not be a mid-range guy, because that's not going to be his role in the NBA. Watching that G League, he really used this year to expand and get better.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just don't think you can bring all of them back. I don't mean...
No, most certainly can't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, two of them aren't like... They need contracts, so I guess that's a factor. But between those three, I wonder if someone is kind of given the reins. And direction is obviously a factor in this too, is like where the Raptors looking to go. It would be surprising if they decide not to try and win next season. Masai, I mean, he believes...
He's a winner. He's a winner. That's what he's about, right? He's been clear about that. Yeah. But that's, you know, he's going to go on there winning. And I appreciate that, especially for our fan base as well, right? They've got accustomed to winning. Mm. They deserve it. It's been great for the city. So I don't expect anything less.
And, you know, if they just made a few tweaks in the margins, like you add a few more skill versatile players, like we could be talking about a very different Raptor team.
Yeah.
In the win loss column, like it's that small. And Kyle Lowry has always said, like, the difference between being good and great, it's not that much, right? It really isn't that much. And it could just be a couple of moves here and there. And all of a sudden you're really cooking with something. But we have to wait for Masai Ujiri to speak. We have to wait. We have
that's
to find
boss,
out.
Man. That's the boss. Yeah,
that's it. You got lots of playoff stuff coming, right?
Yeah.
You busy?
Busy. I'm busy, but I like it. I'm having fun with it. We're enjoying a lot of playoffs, good basketball right now, and it's been fun.
Awesome. I'm going to be watching lots of those late games tonight. We got, for some reason, the
that's the
NBA
ones
decided...
I won't be watching. I can't stay up as late as you.
I have to. I can't. I'm captivated, man. I can't not look, right? But I don't know why the NBA has the Warriors and Kings and the Clippers and Suns on the same night. Yeah. What are you doing? Anyways... Javon, thanks so much, man. Everyone, hope you enjoyed the episode. We will be back with you shortly. Masai, please just give us something, bro. Give us something here. Thanks, Javon.
Thank you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions? Talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics, all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.